Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into the MMQB podcast divisional round edition. I'm Matt Verderam, joined by Gilberto Manzano. As always, it is Wednesday, January 17th, so we are halfway through the wildcard round, the divisional round. We didn't have a lot of suspense in the wildcard round. Of the six games, five of them, I think, are safely classified as blowouts. One of them was a very good game between the Rams and the Lions. We thought that'd be the best game of the weekend. It was. The other five, look, I thought we'd see a few blowouts. Packers and the Cowboys gave us a blowout. Maybe not quite the way people down in Dallas thought it was going to go. But before we even go that far, let me get you in here. Gil, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Matt, there were a bunch of blowouts, and you know the worst part about it, that you know it was extended until a Monday for a doubleheader, so it felt like a really long time to get through the wild card round. But you know, I got no problem. There's a few upsets and some good storylines. CJ Stroud, Jordan Love, you know, advancing after their postseason debuts. You know, some good stories there.
What was the biggest surprise for you of wild card weekend?
You know, I want to say the Cowboys, but I'm sure you feel the same way. We're not really surprised, are we? But the way they got beat down, the way it got out of hand so quickly, and then when Jerry Jones says, yeah, that I did not see that one coming. I've been a part of so many playoff games. I did not see that one coming. Jerry, you've been part of many disappointing playoff losses. So I guess if he's saying that, then maybe it is, you know, surprising and shocking. But, you know, somewhere, I guess, you know, deep down, I'm really not too surprised. But hey, you know, Jordan Love was amazing, but I think that is probably the biggest, you know, surprise of the weekend.
Yeah, I agree with you. If I had to go another direction, though, I would say I'd probably look at Houston. Not so much that the Texans won, because I'm not surprised that they won. I thought that game was probably the biggest coin flip in the AFC. We talked about that last week. It proved to be. Or actually, didn't prove to be, but it was a game that certainly could have gone both ways, and Houston ran away. What I was surprised about in that game, though, was the Browns all year long, this defensive team. Now, if you looked at their home and road splits, they were ridiculous, okay, and not in a good way on the road, and that proved to be the case here. But going into the game, you're like, okay, you have to stop Nico Collins. You have to cover this guy, and they just couldn't do it. I mean, it was unbelievable. How many times, like, Stroud played great, but my God, how many guys are going to be wide open? I mean, there were guys wide open. That's why I thought Jordan Love, I thought his degree of difficulty was a little bit harder, except for Luke Musgrave, who I think nobody was within 50 yards of him on that pass back toward the right sideline. But in any event, it sets up a weekend that, of course, we're going to get into here in a second, and we'll make our picks as always. But it sets up a weekend where, going from the first game to the last game, it is Houston at Baltimore on Saturday afternoon, and then Green Bay at San Francisco Saturday night. It's supposed to be a lot of rain in San Francisco Saturday night, for whatever that's worth to you. Sunday, the 3 o'clock Eastern game is Tampa at Detroit. So we'll have the NFC Championship game set at the end of that one. And then the final game of the weekend, Kansas City at Buffalo. I think that's probably the game most people are honing in on and looking forward to, and we'll break it all down here in a second. But first, let's just go back for a second and kind of look at the fallout of Wild Card Weekend. So the Cowboys don't just lose, as we talked about. They get trounced, not close, 48-32, and it wasn't even that close of a game. No decisions have been made yet. Jerry hasn't really spoken publicly except for right after the games. He always does. Where, like, if you're in charge of the Cowboys, where do they go from here after that game?
Yeah, you know, it is kind of, you know, it's hard to tell what's going on because, you know, they're a little quiet now. It's been 3 days. But then again, this year has been, you know, a lot of meetings for teams and figuring out if they want to stick with the coaches. So maybe it'll come Thursday or Friday. But yeah, I think the Cowboys should go in a different direction for Mike McCarthy, who did a great job, by the way. You know, going 12-5 the last 3 years, you know, it's not easy to do. But when Jerry Jones keeps pushing for a Super Bowl or bust kind of mindset and these high standards and they can't live up to it. So, you know, I think it was a different year, Matt. I think it would have been like, you know what, just try one more year. Let's see what happens. 12-5 is pretty good and winning the NFC East. And then you see, hey, Bill Belichick is out there. Mike Vrabel's out there. Maybe you can even get a Pete Carroll out there, or maybe you could get Jim Harbaugh. So I was going to say Mike Tomlin, but then I guess he's going to come back to Pittsburgh. But there's just so many big names out there that you should at least go and explore that. And I just gave you maybe 3 or 4 names of guys who are better than Mike McCarthy. So if you strike out with Bill Belichick, cool. Try a different direction. Maybe try to get Mike Vrabel or maybe get into the Jim Harbaugh sweepstakes, or even maybe try something new. But, you know, when you keep, you know, falling in the wild card division around, and, you know, I was trying to find a comparison to the Cowboys, but like either you're really like terrible, you're stuck in the middle, or you're really at the top. There's somewhere below the top, and it's like this weird place with a very good roster where they win 12 games, they win a division every now and then, but they can't get past the wild card division around. So you need either an upgrade at quarterback, which I don't think they're going to find better than Dak Prescott, or get something else at head coach, and I think it could be Bill Belichick.
So I don't disagree. If I were Jerry Jones, I would write a blank check and I would FaceTime Bill Belichick and say, Bill, you write in the numbers. All I want from you is a 3-year commitment that you're going to be here for 3 years, because I don't want to do this for 1 year and then you decide you're done. I want you here for 3 years. But if you're here and willing to be here for 3 years, I'll give you anything you want. You want 3 years and $75 million? It's done. I mean, let's be real. Like, I always love when people are like, well, you know, he'd be really expensive. It's Jerry Jones. The guy's got more money than God. What does he care? Right? That's like if I sent my daughter to the ice cream stand $5 and she came back and was like, it's $7. What am I going to do? Go home with her? I mean, yeah, give her a couple bucks. I mean, it's Jerry Jones. The man prints money. He's okay. Right? So if I'm him, money's no object. I'd pay Belichick whatever he wants. And I think it's the best case scenario for both sides. Like, if you're Belichick, you're not going to have to deal with personnel anymore. And you take over a team that is ready-made to contend. Now, I don't think they can go forward with McCarthy. I just don't. And I know they haven't fired him yet. And every day that goes on, the more and more you're like, maybe they'll keep him. And Jerry Jones has a history of, he doesn't have a knee-jerk reaction with coaches. Now, he also has a history that most guys don't get past 4 years with him. Okay? So, Jimmy Johnson, man, won 3 Super Bowls. Or excuse me, 2 Super Bowls. Built the third one. Won 2 Super Bowls. It lasted 5 years because they couldn't work together anymore. Barry Switzer comes in. Barry Switzer's there for 4 years. Okay, they went to the playoffs 3 times. They won a Super Bowl off of Jimmy Johnson's roster. He's gone. Chan Gailey comes in. 1 playoff berth. 1 division title. He was only there for 2 years. By far the shortest tenure anybody's been there under Jerry Jones. Dave Campo was a disaster. 15-33. 3 years, he's out. Then Parcells for 4 years, he retires. Wade Phillips for 4 years, he's gone. Garrett for 10 years, and then McCarthy now for 4. So if you take Garrett out, which is a tenure that should be studied by future civilizations, that he lasted 10 years, 4 years is about it. With Jerry, like he doesn't have the quick trigger. He doesn't have the 1 year guy. Can't, you know, there was only the 1 2-year guy in Chan Gailey, but like usually around 4 years, they turn over. I just don't think if you're Dallas, you can sell running it back. What are you running it back with? Yeah, you win a bunch of games every year. Who cares? You don't do anything. I mean, yes, great. In the last 3 years, they've won two titles in the division. They've won 12 games apiece. They've won playoff win. I mean, at some point, like, okay, great. Glad you won 12 games. I think they need to go get a new head coach. And I think defensively, they got to figure out the linebacker situation. They got killed all game long with the backers. And they got a lot of free agents this year on, in the secondary. They got to figure it out. They got to retool a little bit here.
Yeah, you made some good points, Matt, but I keep picturing Jerry Jones using FaceTime to talk to Bill Belichick, two old guys trying to figure out technology. Yeah,
we can't get people to secretary involved.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't figure out how to use Peacock, but we could use FaceTime, but that'd be something cool to watch, Vin. And yeah, you know, off of your point, man, like, you know, this roster is ready to contend and go far, and they just can't do it. And this year it was kind of like, okay, well, let's give it a try. Mike McCarthy as an offensive play caller. We tried with Kellen Moore. Let's try something new here. And now it's kind of like, what else can you do now? Like, you've had Dan Quinn stay. He didn't go anywhere. You still have the defensive coordinator. You have a lot of talent on the defensive side. Yeah, you lost Javon Diggs, but Deron Bland stepped up. You have Stephon Gilmore. They do have issues at linebacker, but this roster was ready. You can't just go out on a whimper in the wild card round. That was hard for me to say. But, you know, they got destroyed by the Packers. They got destroyed by Jordan Love. And you go from this heartbreaking cycle with Aaron Rodgers, and now you're going to do it again with Jordan Love. I think that really adds more to this kind of, you know, terrible loss here.
Yeah. No, it's totally fair. Very interesting offseason ahead. All right, let's move it over to the Eagles. The Eagles were a tire fire down the stretch, including the playoffs. They lost six of their final seven games. They were absolutely demolished by Tampa. Not competitive on either side of the ball. And defensively, basically quitting at points in that game, like just not even trying to tackle guys anymore. And that was something we saw at the end of the regular season as well. We know that Jason Kelce has not officially announced it, but it looks like he's going to retire. The Eagles, first of all, what would you do with Sirianni, which seems to be the topic du jour in Philly? And then beyond that, where do they go after a year that started out so promising at 10-1 and just absolutely went off a cliff, almost in historic fashion?
Yeah, you know, before people say, hey, you know, how can you, you know, and I'll be straight up, you know, I want Nick Sirianni to get one more year. But if people say, hey, how can you say Mike McCarthy can't get a year? You know, you say Sirianni. Well, Sirianni went to the freaking Super Bowl last year. Like, he did a lot of good things, you know, three consecutive playoff season. And to get just to win those playoff games, to get that far, I think should be enough to get you one more year. And I get it. You know, Howie Roseman is kind of a wild card. You never know what he's going to do with changes. He couldn't make it work with Doug Peterson after he won the Super Bowl, things like that. But I kind of want to point maybe the blame on Howie Roseman. Like, he let a lot of people walk in free agency, and maybe it's not, you know, the worst thing to do, let some, you know, veteran guys leave. But defensively, they went through a whole kind of roster, you know, makeover, and it just didn't really work out. You know, suddenly the depth on defensive line kind of disappeared. Like, when I was watching that playoff game, they said Josh Sweat finally got a sack since week 9. I'm like, what happened to Josh Sweat? So, you know, Hassan Reddick has been pretty quiet. Jalen Carter kind of got, you know, lost his motor at the end. So, you know, if the defensive lines are producing, you're going to hurt a linebacker. You're going to hurt in the aging secondary. So I think maybe Howie Roseman deserves some blame defensively. And then maybe it could be on Sirianni for maybe picking the wrong coordinators. But then again, when you go to a lengthy Super Bowl run, you kind of run out of candidates, and the pool gets smaller to hire new coordinators when your guys leave for a head coaching job. So I don't know. Maybe it feels like you get a shorter, you know, season, a longer offseason to kind of figure out what happened. I would not be surprised if Nick Sirianni figures it out. So I think with them, be a little more patient. But then again, you never know in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know, I always try to, with coaches, like, not be the analyst, the person who says, oh, yeah, you just have to fire this guy because things didn't work out. I mean, that's football, man. Like, one team goes home happy at the end of the year. You know, we're going to get into these games later in the week, or later in the show, I mean. But if the Bills lose to Kansas City this weekend, like, you're going to hear people who are just screaming from the hilltops to fire Sean McDermott. It's going to happen. And it's, well, why? Because they lost to a team that's won two out of the last four Super Bowls? I mean, you're going to fire the guy over that? Good luck. With Sirianni, he's a very weird case because he has been their coach for 3 years, and they've gone to the playoffs all three times. and they've gone to the Super Bowl the 1 year there. 2 years they lost in the wild card round to Tampa Bay. 1 year they were happy to be there, and the other year, obviously this past weekend, it was a disaster. I actually would move on from him, though, for one reason. That collapse at the end of this season was so complete. It makes me think there is something more to it in that locker room. You watch them play. I mean, they were persona non grata on defense. They weren't even out of the field. I had never seen a team just fail to tackle like they did. Not even trying in some case. I mean, guys just jogging to make a play, missing, taking horrible angles. And part of that to me is you demoted Sean Desai at 10-3. And you brought in Matt Patricia, and it's just a panic move. Like, why? I mean, I understand they weren't playing great defensively, but was Matt Patricia going to come in and fix that all of a sudden? I don't love what happened there. And unless he's got a damn good answer for Jeffrey and Lurie and Howie Roseman, I'd move on from him. I think Sirianni is great for the team when things are going good, and he's kind of that arrogant, swaggering guy, and that's fine. Like, everybody's got their own personality, and that works on the East Coast, and that works in Philly. But when things aren't going well, you got to have a change-up. You got to be able to bring guys back to center. They just got worse. I mean, my God, can you imagine if the season was still going on for them? Like, what that would look like next week? Tampa Bay's a 9-8 football team in the NFC South. You got boat raced in a playoff game by them. I don't care that A.J. Brown wasn't there. I don't care. And offensively, which is Sirianni's baby, they looked wholly unprepared for a defense that you know is going to blitz you. I mean, Todd Bowles doesn't exactly hide it. Tons of aggressiveness. They looked like they didn't even know you could blitz in the NFL. So that's my concern. Now, as far as the roster goes, look, if you lose Kelce to retirement, you know, you got issues. Cam Jurgens this year when he played was not great. You got to figure that out. The rest of the line is still very good. But I think defensively, it goes without saying here, you need a little bit of an overhaul. I mean, obviously, you're not getting rid of everybody. I mean, Hassan Reddick, some of the guys up front, like a Jalen Carter. But, man, beyond the front four, like, might be time to get rid of James Bradberry. Might be time to move on from Darius Slay. Might be, I mean, the linebackers are some of the worst linebackers in the league. Brendan Morrow shouldn't even be in the NFL, let alone be a starter in the NFL. So, it's probably time. It's probably time if you're Philadelphia to gut that defense, whether or not Sirianni stays, and then start to move on and figure out the next steps. But, man, it was ugly. Speaking of ugly, let's talk about the Dolphins in Kansas City on Saturday night in what was brutal weather. No doubt about that. So, in that game, the Dolphins scored one touchdown on a bomb to Tyreek. And other than that, they did not threaten. They never got into the red zone. Other than a late drive them at nothing, they didn't even cross Kansas City's 40. Tua in the game, with the benefit of some nonsense yardage at the end of the game, was 20 of 39 for a 199, a touchdown and a pick. 5.1 yards per attempt. His QBR in the game was 15.8. If you're Miami, you're going into an offseason where Tua is extension eligible. They need to open up money because they are way over the projected cap right now. What would you do with Tua? Would you let him play out the rest of this rookie deal, which is his option, which is, I believe, $22 million next year? Would you extend him? Would you make other moves around the team? I mean, what would you do after watching Miami get throttled in Kansas City?
Yeah, you know, first I will explore what's out there. Can you get somebody in a trade? Can you sign somebody better than Tua? Can you draft somebody? And I'm sure there won't be that many options to do better than the passing leader in 2023. And he had a nice season. But, you know, this roster or this team was really aggressive to trade for Bradley Chubb, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Ramsey. They have this Rams mindset where, like, they're all in and they want to win a Super Bowl. And I keep comparing it to when they had Jared Goff and then traded for Stafford and elevated. And I just haven't seen Tua get away from kind of like that Goff, like, you know, that stint with the Rams where, like, you know, he's good enough, but it doesn't win you games. He doesn't, when you have injuries, when the surroundings are pretty bad, he doesn't step up. And he's had those moments and he hasn't really done it. And, you know, I guess in Kansas City, he never really had an opportunity, but he had that opportunity against the Bills in that final drive through interception. So, you know, you see guys like CJ Stroud who, like, doesn't have Tank Dell and has a bunch of injuries and still makes it work. I get it's Nico Collins, but Tua, you have Tyreek Hill. So explore what's out there. Maybe you come back and say, hey, Tua, I know you're due for a contract. Maybe do something where, like, it's kind of like Daniel Jones money, but you could get out in 2 years or maybe 1 year, or maybe what you said, Matt, where, like, let that thing play out and see what happens after that. You could always do the franchise tag, and maybe, you know, it will hurt Tua when it comes to ego or pride, but it might give him that fire, that push. We've seen people do that, or teams do that to players. Hey, we're not going to pay you right now. Go earn it because you haven't done it. So, you know, it is tough to get a quarterback. And I don't want to put all the blame on Tua because I got to see more from Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel has to evolve that scheme, tweak it, add a little more muscle at the line of scrimmage, maybe a passing a tight end who could contribute in the passing game. All this kind of speed and go down the field hasn't worked out there. So it's not all his fault. But he's at his moments to step up, and he hasn't done it. So explore what's out there, talk contract, don't pay him, you know, a bunch of money, and then go from there. Because I think even Tua probably knows in the back of his mind he has to do a little more to get paid $50 million per year.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'll be blunt with this. There's no way in hell I pay him. There's just no way in hell. I don't care that he's great in September. It's kind of like what I just talked about the Cowboys. You know, when you're an up-and-coming team, everyone in the regular season kind of feels like a stepping stone. When you're a team that's a playoff team year in, year out, and the Dolphins have not made it the last couple of years, like, I don't give a damn if you win 10 games in regular season, 11 games in regular season, and then you go to Kansas City and you get your face beat in for four quarters. I don't care. And I don't want to hear about the cold either. Like, guess what? It's January. And if you don't have home field advantage in the AFC, if you're Miami, where are you going? You're going to Kansas City, you're going to Buffalo, you're going to Baltimore, you're going to Cincinnati, you're going to Pittsburgh. Like, unless there's a real, real tropical heat wave in January, you better be able to win a damn game in the cold. Because that's where you're going. And this idea that, like, well, two is good and the offense is great as long as everything's perfect. Well, then guess what? You're never going to a Super Bowl, ever. That's just not going to happen. And watching that game, you know, 26-7, it's a blowout, it's bad enough. But they were not even competitive. I mean, they're very fortunate in that game. They didn't lose by 30-some-odd points. I mean, they were – and I give the defense credit because the defense was beat up like crazy, and they held in. They forced four field goals on six red zone possessions. I give them a lot of credit for that. But offensively, you had all your guys. It wasn't like they were beat up on offense. I mean, they had Mostert. They had Waddle. They had Hill. They had Aitchen. They did nothing. Part of my concern is, as you mentioned, McDaniel. In the playoffs, you got to be able to win more than one way. You can't go into the playoffs and go, hey, this is how we win. And if we can't do this, then we're screwed. And we're going home. And you're going to go home. That's what's going to happen. I mean, it's my concern about Baltimore that we'll talk about that has gone on for years. Baltimore wins a very specific way a lot of the time. Now, I think this year they're more well-rounded. But in past years, it's been got to run the ball like crazy. Got to get in front of you and blitz away. And if they don't do that, it's an issue. Now, this year, this team's different. Like I said, we'll pick those games in a minute. But in the past, they've been one-dimensional at times. It's hurt them. Miami in that game, when it became clear that they were not going to be able to just finesse their way down the field, that game was over. They had no left hook. They had no, you know, I mean, hell, you're a boxing fan, right? You got to be able, you got to be able to throw some different combinations at guys. I don't care how good your number one combination is. Like, if you're fighting somebody who's halfway decent, at some point, you're going to pay for going back to that well over and over and over. I think with Tua, I'd play out the next year with him. I'm not saying dump him or anything. I'd give him next season, but I have him play on the option. Now, the problem they have is looking at their cap sheet. Okay, according to Over the Cap, they're about $41 million over the projected cap next year. And they do not have a whole lot of relief coming. They don't have a lot of contracts they can just cut guys. Now, they have a few. Okay, Emmanuel Ogba, they can save $13.7 million. They'll cut him. Jerome Baker's not a bad player, but they might have to do something there. That's $9.8 million. So if you cut those guys, that's 23 of it. Now you're down to 17. Okay, and then Xavier Howard. Look, they're going to have to probably post-June one him. But if they post-June one him, they save the $18.5 million, and there you go. Now, before that post-June one, they'd only save $2.8 million. So that's not going to happen. But they can do it. The problem is Christian Wilkins is a free agent. Andrew Van Ginkle is a free agent. Now, Connor Williams is a very good center. He's a free agent, but he tore his ACL, so he might not cost much. Might be a one-year deal. The Dolphins, like, things are going to get interesting now. Waddle is eligible for an extension. Okay, now I'm not saying you got to pay him this offseason, but he's going to get paid here sooner rather than later. Starts to get a little difficult. Like, now you're to a point where you're paying huge numbers to guys who they're older, and even though they're still very good, like, it's a lot of money. Bradley Chubb's making 27 against the cap next year. Who knows if he starts the season on time after that injury, right? Jalen Ramsey is an excellent football player. Jalen Ramsey is also 29 years old, and he's making 27.3 against the cap next season. Tyreek Hill remains incredible. He's 29. He's making 31.3 against the cap. I mean, those are huge numbers. Xavier Howard, who's never going to see this money, but 25.9, then Tua is at 23.1. That's his option number. Teron Armstead, who may or may not retire, 20.1. Now, if he retires, you get the cap relief, but then who the hell's your left tackle? The Dolphins have a lot of questions to figure out, but we'll leave that for another time. But just something to think about as they move forward. And then lastly, look, let's go to Cleveland. So the Browns going to Houston as favorites. They get blown out. Flacco throws multiple pick sixes. Obviously, this is Deshaun Watson's spot going forward. I mean, by contract, he has to be. Have the Browns hit their ceiling with who they are, with Watson as their quarterback moving forward? Or do you think there's something else that they can do?
I think you're right, Matt. Or if you're asking me, that's the correct answer. You know, hitting their ceiling. And, you know, I am fascinated to see what they do with the quarterback spot. It'd be kind of nice if they just re-signed Joe Flacco to push Deshaun Watson. Maybe he has another injury, or maybe he's not playing well and you have a backup. Because, you know, at some point you got to say, you know what, Deshaun Watson, you haven't played up to your contract. You're not delivering. You can't stay healthy. You look like you're lost out there. You know, you panic at times. You can't read the coverages. You can't, you know, fit in with Stefanski. So,
right.
And they had some changes today too, right? Offensive changes. So I don't know if that's for Deshaun Watson or whatever it was. They were playing pretty well at the end of the season. So I don't know. You know, the contract makes everything very difficult. I don't know if they could get out of it. But hey, if you have to play with the guy or at least have him on the roster, you know, bring some competition. It doesn't matter if he's your backup. You know, you can't do anything about the contract. Just eat it and move on and just say, hey, Flacco, you're the better guy. And to be honest, I don't see Flacco doing it again for 2 years in a row, year 39 or year 40, whatever it is. But you need something to have as a kind of a safety net for Deshaun Watson there. And it was a good story with Joe Flacco, and it worked out. And, you know, we all know what's going on with Deshaun Watson in his past and him playing so poorly. But, hey, this could maybe be the year where, like, Deshaun Watson gets kind of the Russell Wilson treatment in Denver. We're like, hey, your contract is too massive. We got to figure something out. We'll play you for a bit, but if you mess up, we'll bring in Stidham. And it says a lot that they want Stidham to play over Russell Wilson. But something like that, where, like, hey, get one more year after the contract, and maybe after, you know, the last couple of years of the contract, which I think, Matt, this contract actually starts this year, if I'm correct, or whatever it is.
With Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, or was that? No, that was actually the Russell Wilson one. I kept
That's the Russell confusing. Wilson. Watson has 3 years left with cap numbers of $63.9 million each of the next 3 years.
So either try it out for one more year and then try to get out of it for the last two, but I don't know how you're going to do that. And that's why Andrew Berry is a GM, and he needs to figure that out.
Well, I'm going to save everybody the suspense. Yeah, they're not getting out of that contract because they fully guaranteed the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
They're screwed. They are screwed. They actually benefited from the fact that Watson got hurt, and they were able to bring in Joe Flacco, who gave them this miracle run at the end of the season. I'm going to go ahead and bet that if you got to start five quarterbacks every year, you're probably not going to do that well. And listen, hopefully, you know, Watson's back and healthy next year and all that, but, like, let's just keep it real. Watson has been a disaster since he's been there. He sucked. I know that's real high-level analysis, but, like, he sucked. There's no other way to put it. I guess there is another way. He stunk. He's been terrible, whatever you want to say. Like, here's how many games he's played. Okay, so in 2020, he led the league in passing yardage. 4,823 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. And the Texans managed to go 4-12 with that year, okay? Since then, he played 0 games in 2021 while he sat out. In 2022, he went to Cleveland, served an 11-game suspension. He Came back, he played six games. He went 3-3. He completed 58% of his passes, seven touchdowns, five picks. Then everybody said, hey, look, he's going to have a full off season. He's going to be better this year. He played six games. Now, they went 5-1, largely because of the defense. He, again, in those six games, threw seven touchdowns, this time four picks. The yardage was almost identical. He threw for 13 more yards in this six-game stretch than the last six-game stretch. Completed 61% of his passes. He was awful. And so now you're getting to the point, like, he's played 12 games in the last three seasons. I don't know how you could look at that and think, oh, this team's ready to go. Nick Chubb, look, God bless him. I have no idea if he's ever going to be the same after that injury. That was catastrophic looking anyway. You know, if you're the Browns, like, where do you go from here? I mean, I think it's a good football team, but if he's your quarterback, you've got to factor in the next year. Let's say Rodgers is healthy. Let's say Herbert's healthy. Now you've got C.J. Stroud in the AFC. Good luck. Good luck. I think it's very, very difficult for them. I do think they hit their ceiling. And I think the Browns, because of that contract with Watson, are locked into just a spot from hell. And to your point about Flacco, I'm with you in theory. Bring him back as a backup. But, like, man, can you do that if you're them? Because if Watson has a bad quarter, people in Cleveland are going to be screaming for Flacco, and rightfully so. But, like, you know what? The only thing they can do, in my opinion, that would save him, and I don't think they'd have the guts to do this because I don't know many franchises that would, sit him on the bench. Just sit him. And say, you know what? You're getting your check, man. But that's it. Like, we're done playing you. But I don't think they'll do it. Because I think Haslam would lose his mind if they did that. You're paying this guy now $46 million a year to sit on the bench. It's tough sell for ownership.
Yeah, I say give him one more year. And after that, the Russell Wilson treatment should be on the table at least. But you're right.
All right. Let's move on to the bigger story. And then we'll pick the divisional round games. So, I think this round is fascinating every year. You get four great games typically. And this year, it's a little bit different, actually. There's a lot of, like, clear favorites, clear underdogs, at least in three of the games. There's always pressure on the higher-seeded teams. But this year, I think it's especially so. And really to hone in on it in the AFC. The Ravens in Lamar's tenure have won one playoff game. They've had multiple losses at home. They're hosting a team that is extremely young, not supposed to be here. Rookie coach, rookie quarterback. Although, incredibly, C.J. Stroud and Lamar Jackson have the same amount of playoff wins, which kind of speaks to this whole weird vibe about this game. In the other AFC matchup, you have Buffalo and Kansas City. The Bills have handled the Chiefs three of the four times they've played him in the regular season with Allen and Mahomes squaring off. But in the playoffs, the Chiefs have won both games. Now, this, of course, as well publicized this week, is Mahomes' first road playoff game, all that. I would posit to say the Chiefs pretty much have no pressure in this game. And they've won two of the last four Super Bowls. They've been to three of them. Like, if they lose this game, I don't think anybody's coming for their spot in history. If the Bills lose this game, they're one of the oldest teams in the NFL. They have a lot of guys that they're going to have to make decisions on after this year. This kind of feels, and it's the last year Allen is cheap against the cap. This kind of feels like you got to do it now. And Buffalo, as a city, has never had a champion, except for the AFL Bills, okay, who went back-to-back in 64 and 65. So, which storyline grabs you more in terms of which team's under more pressure? Baltimore, which has had some Super Bowl wins in recent years, but hasn't had success with this iteration of it in the playoffs, and they have 20 guys hitting free agency, a ton of name guys. Or is it the Bills, who it's a city starved for a champion, and it's a team that, look, this has been their kryptonite in the playoffs. Two of the last 3 years, and they've gotten there. Kansas City's knocked them out. This is at home. Which team do you think's under more pressure?
Yeah, it's a tough one, but you know what? I'll go with Baltimore. I think because of Lamar Jackson, I feel like a lot of people don't give him enough credit. And if Josh Allen loses, I'm like, hey, he's still a top five quarterback to me. And with Jackson, he doesn't get the same type of respect. So if he loses this game, and he's been a number one seed before, and, you know, he was one and done before. Same thing with John Harbaugh. You know, it's reminiscent of 2019 when they had that long layoff. And, yep, you know, they see Derrick Henry, who's in rhythm, and just kind of, you know, beat them, you know, up the middle. So, hey, they have to face C.J. Stroud, a young, you know, rookie sensation with a a very good head coach, DeMeco Ryans. So to me, it's Baltimore. So you go and crush the Detroit Lions, you crush the Seahawks, you crush the 49ers, you crush the Dolphins, you crush everybody. And then you let the young, pesky team Texans beat you up. It might be a bad look for Lamar Jackson. Could be a bad look for John Harbaugh. Could be a bad look all around. And people always criticizing their style, their scheme, things like that. So, you know, they do have that. You know, I know John Harbaugh has a Super Bowl, so maybe it's not, you know, the most pressure for him. But I think in terms of Lamar Jackson and people finally saying, hey, this guy's a top five quarterback, he won the playoff game, it's time to respect the guy. I think for him, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you know what? You could make a case either way. And San Francisco has its own pressure this weekend as well. But I think it's a little different with them because the Warriors share that city and the Warriors have done nothing but win. Now, for the Niners themselves, there's certainly a lot of pressure. I mean, you're a one seed facing a seven seed and you have been dominant all year. There's pressure. And they've been close at winning Super Bowls. They haven't gotten there. So they are certainly facing pressure. I just think Baltimore and Buffalo face more of it based on their history. I will say that it's Buffalo, and I think you could genuinely make a case either way, but I just think with the Bills, you're to a point like, this has been it has been a weird year for the Bills. If you remember, it started out with, if you want to go back to how last season ended, it ends with Diggs on the sideline, pissed off. They're getting blown out by Cincinnati at home. They lose that game. We go to OTAs. Diggs is nowhere to be found. And there's all this stuff. McDermott says, don't know where he is. And, it's not a big deal. And they're trying to cover the tracks for it and all this, back and forth. Then they get into the season. And they started 6-6. And then as they're going to play Kansas City, Ty Dunn posts a story about, McDermott essentially using Al-Qaeda and a terrorist organization and a terrorist attack as, like, motivational speak for a training camp monologue he'd given years ago. McDermott comes out and apologizes and all that stuff. Then there's been all these stories about, why isn't Diggs getting the ball more? Why is the snap count decreasing? I mean, it's just on and on and on. It feels like a team that if they lose this weekend to Kansas City, do you need to start making some significant changes to the roster? And part of that's age, too. Part of that's not just, the stuff I mentioned. There was also the ugliness of Von Miller potentially off the field, I should say allegedly off, but like there was that. Do you start, if you're the Bills, you start looking at this thing going, all right, we got to make some decisions here. Like, you probably do. And Poyer and Hyde are good players. They're well over 30 years old. Mitch Morse, over 30 years old. You got Milano coming off injury. Okay, he'll be back. Fine. Tre'Davious White now, multiple big-time injuries in recent years, right? Von Miller is a hood ornament at this juncture. He had half a sack this season. He can't play anymore. You have him at a huge number. Gabe Davis is a free agent. I think most Bills fans would say, okay, see you later. Dawson Knox, good player, been kind of relegated to second string duty as Kincaid has blossomed into a very nice tight end. All this is to say, though, like, this feels kind of like the last dance with this group. Not saying their competitive window is going to be open for a long time with Josh Allen, but with this group, kind of feels like this may be it. And that's also true in Baltimore. I guess what breaks the tie for me is who they're playing. They have to beat this team. And like I said earlier about Miami, and I said earlier about Dallas, I don't give a damn that they beat them in the regular season. I don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to remember that football game. If they get the Chiefs at home this weekend and they don't beat them, it's going to be a conversation all offseason of you're good, but you're not good enough. You had them at home, you still couldn't beat them. And factor in the history of the city, I think that if Buffalo loses, it is a major, major five-alarm fire in Buffalo. Whether or not it even should be. Maybe you just say, hey, look, you're also a good team, you're on it back. But I think that's what the reality would be in Buffalo.
Yeah, and having three postseason losses to the same team, I'm sure it could be killer for the mind. And then what happens to Stephon Diggs next year? And like you mentioned, an aging defense. I do like what they did with James Cook and Khalil Shakur and Dalton Kincaid. They have some young pieces, but you're right, Matt. If they don't win this one, this core group here might be different.
It feels like one of those games where it's kind of a fulcrum point for them. Like they have to win this game, and I think like much like Baltimore, I think it's true for both of these teams this weekend. And then we'll pick the games here. Like Houston has absolutely no pressure at all. I mean, nobody thought they'd be here. Kansas City. I mean, there's always pressure in the sense of like, hey, look, you're a contender, you can win a Super Bowl, but like. They've won two of the last four Super Bowls. I mean, if they lose this game, nobody's going to be like, what the hell happened to Kansas City? You know, rip it all down. I mean, nobody's going to feel like that. The Chiefs can go into this game with a ton of freedom in the way they feel, as Houston certainly can. I wonder if in one of these games, if the road team gets up early, does it almost become a disadvantage for the Bills or for the Ravens that they're at home? Because that tension, that stress. I mean, look, I grew up a Chiefs fan who watched the Chiefs blow every playoff game imaginable at Arrowhead Stadium. And let me tell you something. You could feel it. Like, through the television, you could feel it. Like, the tension, the nerves, just, oh, God, is it going to happen again? That doesn't mean you can't overcome it, but, like, I always felt that with the Chiefs, where it was like, it almost hurt them when they were in their own building because it was so suffocating. What happens if Houston gets up 10-0 in this game? What happens if Kansas City, if Mahomes comes out firing and they're 14-0 8 minutes into the game? What happens? Maybe those teams rise up. Maybe that's the adversity that they need to kick it in a high gear and get over it. Or maybe it's one of those things where those teams go, oh my God, it's happening again. You know, that it's a very interesting scenario here. Look, let's get into it. So we'll just go right down from the first game to the last game of the weekend. All these odds presented by SISportsbook.com, where, of course, you can bet on the NFL. You can bet on all of your sports that you love so much. Texans at Ravens. We've laid out the game. We've laid out the scenario. The Ravens are favored by 9.5 points. Do you like the Ravens to win and cover? Do you like them to win but have the Texans cover? Or do you see their huge upset in the making?
Yeah, this is a tough one. And like I mentioned last week, the Texans have been good to me. And I picked them against the Browns. And they came through. And they were at home. But now they're going on the road against a team that's just been crushing everybody. And I am worried about the long layoff for the Ravens. And we keep talking about 2019 for Lamar Jackson. And having to face C.J. Stroud, who just, you know, playing like he's in the conversation with Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. So you better have a good star quarterback at the NFC to keep up. And that kind of the year of the backup quarterbacks, and we see the top four quarterbacks in the NFC, they're all superstars. So you're going to have a chance with C.J. Stroud. But it's going to be close. But I've seen, you know, Baltimore winning these shootouts when they got pushed by the Rams. That was a fun game there. So, you know, when I saw that and I keep seeing them, you know, moving the ball down the field, explosive. You know, with Tom Monken's scheme, it took a while to get going, but that second half when they were a juggernaut, you know, Isaiah Likely really emerged. You know, I like Zay Flowers. Even OBJ is doing some things there. They might even get Mark Andrews back. So give me the Baltimore Ravens. It won't be a one-sided loss like what they handed to the 49ers and the Dolphins in back-to-back weeks. I think C.J. Stroud makes it close, but give me the Ravens to win this game.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat here. I do think the Texans have a shot to win this football game, though. I really do. I don't think they will. I'm going to pick Baltimore. But I think this is going to be a very good football game. Houston's good. Houston's really good. And they are very well coached. Like, they're going to come up with some stuff in this game. And it's been interesting with Baltimore. So Baltimore leads the league in sacks this year. And so when you look at that, you want to go in a little bit further. So under Wink Martindale for years, they were like the most blitz-heavy team in the league. Okay. This year, Baltimore, despite leading the league in sacks, 25th in blitz rate. So they're doing it without sending a whole lot of guys. Now, what I find, though, fascinating. So they lead the league in sacks. They're 25th in blitz rate. Their pressure rate is 23rd. So basically, like, when they're getting home, they're unbelievable at getting guys down to the ground. But they're not getting a ton of pressure. They're just very good at finishing the job when they get there. Houston, on the other hand, 5th in the league in pressure rate. They get home. They're sack-wise, they rank 13th. So they're more middle of the pack there, but they get a lot of pressure. I am fascinated to see how this all shakes on Saturday afternoon. I will pick the Ravens. I think it's close. But I'll tell you, I would not be shocked if Stroud went in there and won this football game. I wouldn't be. I think they're good enough to do it. They're a team that's on the rise. And sometimes you see these teams come in, they win a game, and they're kind of fluky. I don't think Houston's fluky at all. I think Houston's got some really good young players. Keep an eye out on Houston's edge rushers in this game. Will Anderson Jr. and Jonathan Greenard, they are really, really good young edge rushers. They could be the difference in this game. They can create a turnover or two that might spell trouble for Baltimore. All right. Same spread for the nightcap. The Packers at the 49ers. Packers obviously off an unbelievable win. They score 48 points. They play the 49ers, who, much like Baltimore, have been resting now for multiple weeks. The Niners come into this game favored by 9.5. The weather in Santa Clara is not supposed to be great, if that matters to you at all. I'm checking right now just to make sure we're updated here. But last I saw, it was supposed to rain pretty significantly on Saturday night. Of course, it's San Francisco, so it's not like it's going to be freezing or anything. But could be wet conditions, and yes, Saturday night, about 55 to 60 degrees, no wind, but there will be some rain. Your thoughts on Packers-Niners?
Maybe it doesn't matter, but maybe for Green Bay, you know, always playing the cold could be something there, a little bit of an edge at Levi Stadium for this young Packer crew. And, you know, they're kind of like the Texans. I want to, you know, give them some love and you know, no pun there with Jordan Love. But, you know, so many weapons, good offense, good coaching. And even the defense has been picking up with Joe Burrow. I don't know where this came from, but it's been two games, you know, when everybody kept saying Chicago needs to win this game in Week 18. Joe Barry in that defense and Jair Alexander and all those guys stepped up. So they did it again to Dak Prescott. We'll see if they step up. That could be the key there. But, you know, I think the 49ers needed that extra bye week. Christian McCaffrey was banged up. Trent Williams was banged up. And, you know, obviously, you know, Deebo Samuels had some injuries too. So, you know, and maybe even Brock Purdy for a little bit. But, you know, when that team is, you know, healthy and clicking and fresh, they're pretty dominant. I know the Baltimore Ravens beat them up when they had a full roster and there was no excuses in that one. But given the 49ers, I think, you know, we have at least no Kyle Shanahan knows how to get to the NFC title game, unlike the Cowboys. So yeah. They tend to do their job in this round. At least they haven't won a Super Bowl in 30 years, but they know how to get far. But, man, I really like what Matt LaFleur did with Jordan Love. And just seeing Jordan Love and, you know, he's probably going to hear this all the time, but just the tendencies that he has that are reminiscent of Aaron Rodgers, you know, extending plays, you know, being so poised and calm in the pocket and then, you know, rifling a throw for 30 yards to Luke Musgrave or Romeo Doubs or Dontavian Wicks or whatever. Yep. I could keep going on. Jaden Reed, Christian Watson. So they're fun. They're loaded. They're feisty. Good offense. Good coaching. Inconsistent defense. But I think, you know, they'll make it a game. But I would not be surprised if 49ers, you know, cover the spread and win by 10 points.
Yeah, look, I love what the Packers have done, and I'm super impressed by them. And I've gotten to see them up close quite a bit this year. I've seen a few of their games in person. I went up there for OTAs to sit down and write on Jordan Love and got to speak to him. Matt LaFleur, got to sit down with him for a half hour, talk ball. I mean, I think what they're doing up there is going to be sustainable for a long time. I think this is a really tough game. This is a game where Joe Barry against Kyle Shanahan is kind of terrifying. They're going to have to score in the 30s to win this game. And I don't think they're going to do it. I think this is like a 35 to 23 game. I think it's close for a while. And then the Niners pull away in the second half. The Niners are just the best team in the NFC. I'm sorry. With due respect to the next two teams we're going to talk about as well. And Green Bay. They're better. I mean, in the AFC, I don't think Houston could go to the Super Bowl. I think the other three teams can. I don't think anybody's going to the Super Bowl except for San Francisco in the NFC. I just don't. I Detroit would be the team that you'd go maybe, like if they played a perfect game, maybe. But like, I don't know, man. That team is a rough, rough team to deal with. Give me San Francisco. Give me like yourself here to cover. I think they'll pull away a little later on in the game. All right. Detroit. Midday Sunday, first game on Sunday, at home again. Didn't host a playoff game for 30 years, and now we're going back-to-back weeks for Detroit. By the way, good for Detroit, man. I don't know if you saw the video. Did you see when Eminem was hyping up the crowd to Lose Yourself?
Yeah. Before?
That was cool. That was really cool. I was like, man, I wish I covered the game for that alone, just to be in the building. That was pretty sweet. Lions at home, taking on Tampa Bay. Tampa off of a very impressive win. The Lions favored by 6.5 in the divisional round over the Bucks. What say you about this one?
You know what? I'll take the Bucks to cover, but I'll take Detroit. I feel like I haven't given them enough credit all year. And, you know, at first it's more like, I got to see it to believe it. And then they were winning. And then like, oh, well, that defense is pretty bad. And then it's like, I don't know. Maybe Jared Goff is not as good as he was last year. He's turning over the ball. But they really impressed me against the Rams. Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson, you know, and Aaron Glenn too, out coach Sean McVay and his coaching staff. That was a brutal fourth quarter for Sean McVay. And Dan Campbell just stuck to his guns and his identity, saying, Jared Goff, go throw the freaking football on 2nd and 9 and go win the ball game because that team gave up on you. And I loved everything about that. So, you know, Todd Bowles is going to blitz, and when you blitz Jared Goff, that could be an issue. And it won't be like where Nick Sirianni and Brian Johnson refused to go max protection or give him an extra blocker. Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell will adjust to Todd Bowles' defense. But, you know, Todd Bowles, I felt like he might have been a little bit on the hot seat, but that was a great performance there. You know, when you have Vita Vea to help you out in the middle, you got Antoine Winfield Jr., you got some young pieces, and Yaya Diaby, hopefully not butchering his name. Is it the first round pick? I'm blanking on his name.
Kalijah Kansi.
There you go. You got it. So
he's been excellent.
He's been great, and he kind of was slow at first, and then he's picking it up. So that's all credit to Todd Bowles. I know Dave Canales is doing a great job as the OC. You know, I'm just spending my time to give love to the Buccaneers. But they're not going to win this game. It's in Detroit. I like everything Dan Campbell's doing. Amon Ross St. Brown does not get enough credit, I feel like.
He's incredible.
Great wide receiver. Sam Laporta playing last week was also good to see. So give me the Detroit Lions.
Well, you and I are boring with this stuff because it always feels like we have similar picks. We're in lockstep again. Same deal. I think the Bucs will cover. I think the Lions. When I think the Bucs backdoor cover this thing, I think it's like 24-20, 27-23. Look, I won't be boring. I'll try to give you something to think about. You know what the Lions ranked this year in pass defense?
I do not. Is 30th. It in the bottom?
Oh, you're okay. 30th. So if there's a world for Tampa to win this game, it's Mike Evans and Chris Godwin coming out and dominating. That's the game. I mean, now the question is, you know, Canales, will he open it up and just let it rip? Baker threw all over the place against Philly. Hell, he would have thrown for 400 yards if they didn't drop all those passes. I really like Baker being able to throw the ball in this football game. It's ideal conditions. Playing in the dome. You're throwing at two top-end receivers. Otten's not a bad tight end. Like, you got some weapons here. That, to me, is the path, along with, and you mentioned, like, Kalijah Kansi, those guys up front, right, Vita Vey, causing some issues on the interior. Problem is the Lions have a great offensive line. And so that's kind of what swings me in this game. I think the Lions can handle the blitzing and the four-man pressures a lot more than Philadelphia. Philadelphia's got a good offensive line. Philadelphia's just a disaster by the end of the season. Detroit is not a disaster. I think it's an interesting game. But I do like Detroit to win. I think Detroit wins by, you know, 3-4 points, something like that. I think it's a little bit more comfortable than that makes it sound. But I give the Bucs a lot of credit. Everybody thought they were going to suck this year. They don't suck. They're good. And Baker, all the credit in the world to him. Yeah, can you believe Baker's got 2 playoff wins in his career?
Yeah.
Baker's got more playoff wins than some guys that we hold in high regard. Trevor Lawrence. Now, of course, Trevor Lawrence is younger. I get that. But he's got more. I mean, this isn't a knock on the man. It's just a fact. He's got more playoff wins than Lamar Jackson does. Which is insane. Like, nobody would think of Baker Mayfield in Lamar Jackson's category, but here he is. So take that for what it's worth. All right. Last game of the weekend. The smallest spread of the weekend. The Bills are hosting the Chiefs in the 2-3 matchup at 6:40 Eastern time Sunday night. The Bills are favored by 2.5 on our books, 3 in some other books. Do you see the Bills advancing to the AFC title game for the second time in 4 seasons and beating the Chiefs? Or do you see Kansas City advancing and either visiting Baltimore, as I guess in this case we would both expect, or hosting Houston?
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, I guess I did okay with my wild card picks because I had a couple of upsets. And, you know, I picked a lot of teams to cover the spread and that did well, but I feel like I needed an underdog, and I can't believe I'm going to call the Chiefs an underdog. I guess they are technically when it comes to the sports betting line. So this might be a dangerous week for me to go to a lot of favorites here, and I think we might have the same picks here. But I'm going with Kansas City, and, you know, they are going to Buffalo, first-time playoff game on the road for Patrick Mahomes. But, and now people are knocking the Dolphins too, but I like that dominant victory. They weren't messing around. That Chiefs defense with LeJarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie, like those two cornerbacks alone, to go up against all the weapons Josh Allen has, that's going to be the fun matchup. Best on best, Josh Allen's offense against Chris Jones and that Chiefs defense. That's going to be really fun to watch. And then the other side, you're going to have a shorthanded Bills defense that lost 2 more guys or 3 guys against Pittsburgh.
Right.
Like, I'm going to bet on Patrick Mahomes and Rashee Rice, and And Travis Kelce, and I read your story too, Matt. A good story on Rashee Rice. Like, the way they used that guy, they finally used him as their number one wide receiver. Not a guy, hey, go be a security blanket. Go help out Mahomes when it's kind of trouble. Move the chains. No, he became a focal point of the offense. So I think going off of that, give me the Chiefs to win that game. It's going to be a close game. The Bills really needed a lot of pressure. But I guess I'm taking the Chiefs as my one underdog of the weekend.
You know, this game, I know people are sitting there listening, especially if they're Bills fans, are like, oh, this guy, he's going to pick Kansas City because he grew up a KC fan. Look, in our brackets that we had to submit before the playoffs, I had this game happening, and I had Buffalo winning the game. My biggest concern for Buffalo right now is what you said toward the end of that. If they don't have Terrell Bernard in this game, if they have a limited Terrell Bernard in this game, if Teron Johnson is either out or limited, that changes a lot of things about the way this game might play out. Because if you watched, after those guys went out of the game against Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph shredded the crap out of Buffalo down the middle of the field. I mean, they were, between the numbers, getting everything they wanted to get. And that's Mason Rudolph. Like, that's not Patrick Mahomes and Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. These two teams saw each other earlier in the year. The Bills have all the same guys. They do add Daquan Jones back, but now, of course, they're going to be missing some guys as well. Kansas City did not have Isaiah Pacheco in that game, did not have Drew Tranquil in that game, did not have Mecole Hardman in that game. I think this is easily the best game of the weekend. And I will give you the 3 points to me that will determine this game one way or the other. And whoever does better in the majority of them, I think, wins. Turnovers. Both teams have turned the ball over a lot this year. The difference is the Chiefs very rarely take the ball away. Buffalo leads the league in takeaways. If Kansas City's going to win, they got to at least be even in the turnover battle. They may not have to win it, but they got to be even. When Buffalo has the ball, the Bills have to be able to run the ball in this game. Because this is going to be my one take that sounds like a hot take, but it's not. The Bills are not throwing the ball in this football game. I'm telling you right now, nobody has thrown for 300 yards against Kansas City this year. And for people who are going, yeah, but not everybody's Josh Allen. Josh Allen threw for 5.5 yards per attempt the first time they played each other. And I went back and I watched that game on the All-22 earlier this week because I was curious how that looked, were their guys open. The first half and the first drive of the third quarter, the Bills managed 17 points across that stretch. Allen was sacked once. He threw a pick. But other than that, very clean. Wasn't crazy. Like, wasn't wild yardage. He was 17 to 27 in that stretch for a 176 and a touchdown, along with what I said earlier. So, on the whole, basically high sixes in terms of yards per attempt. Not bad. The rest of that game, the last four drives, he was 5 of 13 for 53 yards. And two of those completions went for 25 yards apiece, which means on the other 11 throws, he completed three passes for 3 yards. And what happened was the Chiefs went into a man look. They pretty much played solely man, and they blitzed. They got two sacks. They had a third one called back on a so-so illegal contact hole penalty down the field. All this is to say, listen, I think Buffalo's going to have to run the ball in this game, and they're going to have to do it effectively with Cook and Allen. When the Chiefs have the ball, I already mentioned it, the Bills have to defend the middle of the field. If it's one of these things where it's just a freeway, go watch the Dolphins tape. They had backup linebackers in. The Chiefs just put them in hell the entire game. They made them communicate. They made them look at motion all game long. The Dolphins are constantly out of position, and the Chiefs just killed them with Rice and Kelce. If Bernard doesn't play in this game, and it's A.J. Klein and it's Terrell Dodson, that's a problem. The Chiefs are going to go after them. They will isolate them. They will relentlessly attack them. Whoever wins those 3 points to me wins the game. Because of the injuries in a game I think is a coin flip, I will take Kansas City. I will take them to win, I don't know. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think it's going to be a lot more low-scoring than people think. How's this? 19-16. I don't think either team's getting 20 points. And I think it's going to be the Chiefs getting down the red zone. They can't convert, which is why I think they're going to kick 4 field goals again. And I think Buffalo is going to get down there a few times. But I think they'll have, you know, whatever, maybe a touchdown and 3 field goals. I do think it's going to be one of these games. Whenever you think of these two teams, you think of the offenses. I think this is going to be a very physical football game. Downhill, smash mouth point of attack. I don't think that Buffalo is going to throw all over the Chiefs. The last time they played, Diggs had 4 catches for 24 yards. Shakir had 1 catch. Kincaid had 5 catches for 21 yards. And Davis had no catches. So, I think that's going to be a very interesting football game. But I think that is by far the biggest coin flip of the weekend. I would not be at all surprised if the Bills went. All right. What's going on this week? What's happening?
Yeah, not much, you know, but it is kind of this time of year where, like, you know, your buddies and your family members want to hit you up. They just go watch this playoff game and that playoff game. I'm like, well, you know, I got to work. I got to cover this game or cover that game. And, you know, my girlfriend's brother, he's a big Chiefs fan. So he invited me over. I'm like, I'll stay to this one. You know, I didn't have too much work, but, you know, it's tough to try to get that laptop out and then people talking and having all these debates about football. So, but it's a good time to kind of, that's one of the luxuries about, you know, not covering a game in person. You get to be at home with your laptop. So with some people that, you know, you care about. So other than that, it's all football, but it is kind of hard to juggle. You know, can I go to that or that or that or watch that, you know, that kind of thing. But it's been good.
Yeah, it's funny. I always, like, the word has gotten out in my circle of life as to what I do for a living. So whenever I go to my, you know, I'm 35, but apparently like 90, I play pickleball every day. So I, it's gotten to a point now where I go to this place called Victory, which is just this huge complex where they have a million different pickleball courts, and become a member there. And the reason I bring it up is, like, now it's to a point where I'll be sitting there between games and I'm, you know, whatever, I'm getting a drink of water or I'm, you know, I'm talking to somebody, and somebody will come up to me and go, "Hey, listen, so-and-so told me what you do for a living. What do you think the Bears should do with their number one overall pick?" And at first, I, to be honest with you, it kind of, like, not annoyed me, but I was like, all right, come on, man. Like, I'm just trying to be here and enjoy.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of funny because now it's gotten to a point where people I don't even know will be, "Hey, by the way, what do you, you know?" And, like, they're almost always, like, a little older. And you're like, "Ah, it's all right. It's cool. Whatever. What the hell," right? Hey, listen, SI, if in Illinois subscriptions start going up, I want to cut. Because I've been telling everybody to buy the damn magazine, okay? I've been telling everybody to subscribe. I know I've gotten a few people to do it, so that's cool. Nice. But no, I mean, look, the real thing I was going to say, though, this is my favorite weekend of the year in the NFL. You know, the wild card round's a lot of fun, but you usually have a couple teams in there that, frankly, are kind of BS. And you're like, all right, they're here because they won a division, but the division sucked. Or they're the Steelers, and so, like, okay, we have to watch this. This weekend, including Tampa, who I know at 9-8 the regular season, but, like, there's no weak sisters. Like, all these teams are good teams. Now, maybe they can't all win the Super Bowl. I don't think the Texans and the Buccaneers and the Packers can win the Super Bowl, but they're all at least interesting. And in the case of a couple of those teams, you're talking about really, really good up-and-coming quarterbacks, right? Who can, like, really enhance their stature even more than they did this past weekend. Like, with Love and Stroud, we're already sitting here going, okay, these guys are legit. They're the next wave. If they go on the road and Love beats San Francisco, or Stroud beats Lamar Jackson and company, like, you're like, oh my God, like, they're like a step away from going to Super Bowl, you know? So everything changes. And you know as well as I do, man, of the three games that have the bigger spreads this week, because I don't think anybody would be shocked either way with the Chiefs and the Bills. Of the three games this week that everybody's on the one side, you know one of them's going the other way. It's just the way it is. It's the NFL. Yeah. I don't know which one it is. If I did that, I could make a lot of money. But, like, one of them's going to go the other way. I love this weekend. I cannot wait. For divisional round weekend to start in Baltimore, Saturday, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. All right. We will be back next week to break down the AFC and NFC title games. And look back at the week that was. Maybe even talk about some coaching hires. Might have a few by then. For Gilberto Manzano, I am Matt Verderam. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe. Please leave us a rating and review if you wouldn't mind. We'd really appreciate it. Appreciate all of you guys listening as is. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.